Hi, and welcome to the magazine Rack on Chris. I'm Bill Walton. Today, I will be reading from the April 2024 issue of The Atlantic. In today's program, we'll finish the article from last week titled After the Miracle, written by Sarah Zhang. Doctors told me they could think of only one other comparable breakthrough in recent memory, the arrival of powerful HIV drugs in the 1990s. Like Trikafta, those drugs were not a cure, but they transformed AIDS from a terminal illness into a manageable chronic one. Young men got up from their deathbed, newly strong and hale. AIDS hospices emptied, and then went bankrupt. This was a remarkable turn of events, but it elicited a complicated mix of emotions, not all of them joyful. Some patients who were no longer dying grew depressed, anxious, and even suicidal at the thought of living. This phenomenon became known as Lazarus syndrome. Death is an end, after all. Life comes with problems. Patients who spent lavishly during what was supposed to be their last days now had no money to live on. Those who stayed with a lover in sickness found that they could not actually stand them in health. They fretted about insurance and paperwork and chores, everyday annoyances that would no longer be obliterated by imminent death. In 1996, the writer Andrew Sullivan, who was HIV positive, described life after the advent of HIV drugs in his essay, When Plagues End. When you have spent several years girding yourself for the possibility of death, it is not so easy to gird yourself instead for the possibility of life. What you expect to greet with the euphoria of victory comes instead like the slow withdrawal of an excuse, and you resist it. The intensity with which you had learned to approach each day turns into a banality that refuses to understand or even appreciate the experience you have just gone through. For some HIV patients, the reversal of fortune seemed unreal. "He doesn't trust what's happening to him," one doctor said about a patient who had made a dramatic recovery, yet found himself in psychological distress. Doubts like these crept into the minds of many people on Trikafta too. What if the new drug stopped working, or had horrible side effects, or stopped being covered by insurance? Trikafta's sticker price is more than $300,000 a year. Insurance typically covers most of that cost, minus what can be significant copays and deductibles, and Vertex offers copay assistance. But patients' lives ultimately depend on decisions made by nameless bureaucrats in rooms far away. Insurance plans can suddenly change what they cover, and in 2022, Vertex announced that it would substantially reduce its financial assistance. A 43-year-old woman I interviewed asked not to be named because she feared that speaking about her improved health would cause her to lose disability benefits, which would also get her kicked off the government insurance that pays for Trikafta. Her health has not improved as dramatically as others has, and she still has frequent infections and occasional bleeding in her lungs. If she returns to work, but her health declines, it could take a long time to get back on disability, time she would have to go without Trikafta. She would also need a job with health insurance good enough to cover the expensive drug. But could she even get one as a 40-something with no recent employment history? For other patients, new health granted new independence, which could be scary too. As a child, Patrick Allen Brown was sick enough to miss long stretches of school. His parents didn't expect him to do chores, let alone support himself with a job one day. So much of his life was spent in the hospital that movies became his way of understanding the outside world. In his teens and 20s, he drank heavily. After Trikafta restored Brown's physical health, he was no longer a chronically ill adult who lived with his parents. He was a pretty healthy adult who still lived with his parents. He was 32 and hadn't finished college. Now he had to budget, commit to a career. He decided to get sober. When one of his parents needed back surgery recently, their roles flipped. He became the caretaker. Brown has now graduated from culinary school and found work as a chef, but he feels as if he's still catching up to his peers. The great blossoming of possibilities on Trikafta also dredged up regret about decisions too late to undo. Kara Hansen, age 41, has a daughter who was adopted, and she had always wanted another child. But in 2016, she had to be repeatedly hospitalized, in April, then again in May, July, and August. She gave up on having a second child. How could she, if she couldn't even guarantee living for the daughter she already had? Then, in 2018, she joined the original trial for Trikafta, becoming one of the first people in the world to experience its miraculous effects. If she had known her health would improve so dramatically and hold steady 6 years on, she would have tried to get pregnant, but she feels like it's too late now. To plan for such a miracle would have been foolish, but to live in its unexpected aftermath can still be painful. After a year on Trikafta, Jenny told Teresa something that she acknowledged sounded insane, but that her sister understood immediately. "To no longer be actively dying kind of sucks," she said. The certainty of dying young, she realized, had been a security blanket. She'd never worried about retirement, menopause, or the loneliness of outliving a parent or a partner. Cystic fibrosis had defined her adult life. Now what? For so long, she'd just been trying to see her daughter graduate from high school. Now she faced seeing Morgan go off and live her own life. What then? Jenny had become active in patient advocacy, and soon after the start of the pandemic, she volunteered to moderate an online patient forum on mental health for her CF center in Utah. It went so well that her longtime social worker at the center felt compelled to give some career advice. Try social work. Jenny enrolled in an online master's program in 2022, and this past fall she chose a practicum with a hospice agency. Having watched the death of so many friends and contemplated her own, she felt prepared to shepherd people through the sadness and awkwardness, and even humor, that accompany the end of life. She understood, too, the small dignities that mean the world when your body is no longer up to the task of living. One hospice patient, she noticed, often had trouble understanding conversations because his hearing aids were never charged correctly. She got the situation fixed, and on a recent visit, he wanted to listen to music, playing for her the favorite songs of his youth. On another man's shelf, she recognized a birding book, and she made plans for a window feeder to bring birds to him. Jenny doesn't share the details of her life with patients, but in their experiences with death, she has seen her own refracted. One hospice patient, a devout elderly woman, was estranged from her adult son, who no longer believed. Jenny herself grew up religious, Mormon in her case, but she is not anymore. Her family is still Mormon, as is virtually everyone in the town she has lived in since childhood, which has 3,500 people, several Mormon churches, and a Mormon temple. She is liberal, whereas most of her relatives voted for Donald Trump. Still, Jenny has made a point of staying close to her large, tight-knit family, knowing she would die young and had long ago clarified that she wanted to leave with no regrets, no grudges, and no words left unsaid to the people she loved. In the foothills outside town one day, she pointed in the direction of her house, her brother's house, her mom's house, her dad and stepmom's house, all minutes away from one another. Although Trikafta looks to be a very safe drug for most people, it does have side effects. It can cause cataracts as well as liver injury. More perplexing, Trikafta may affect the brain. For Jenny, starting Trikafta coincided with a wave of intense insomnia, brain fog, and anxiety. For months, she could sleep only 2 or 3 hours a night. She'd lose her phone and find it in the freezer. Her lungs were so much healthier, but her brain was going haywire. Soon, she realized that other CF patients had begun sharing stories online of depression, anger, or suicidal thoughts that emerged at the same time they started taking Trikafta. Doctors sometimes chalked up these symptoms to the existential unease of no longer dying, or the fear and isolation everyone felt in the early days of the pandemic. But Jenny's doctor took the side effects she reported seriously enough to suggest that she halve her Trikafta dose, and soon after they subsided. Some of her CF symptoms did return, but they were muted enough that she could pare down her regimen of treatments. The link between Trikafta and these symptoms in the brain is still not fully proven or understood. We've done an in-depth analysis of the preclinical data, clinical data, and real-world evidence data, and we don't find any causal relationship, Fred Van Gore, a vice president and head of the CF research at Vertex, told me in January. And an analysis co-authored by the company's scientists last year found similar rates of depression and suicidality in CF patients with or without Trikafta. But in November, a group of scientists published a review arguing that the possible neuropsychiatric effects of Trikafta deserved a serious research effort. The protein behind CF is found in cells throughout the body, including the brain. Trikafta could be acting on the brain directly, the authors hypothesized, or it could be acting indirectly via changes to inflammation throughout the body or specifically in the gut. The drug may affect different subsets of patients differently, says Anna Georgopoulos, a psychiatrist at Massachusetts General Hospital, who co-authored the review. She believes that neuropsychiatric side effects afflict only a small minority of people on Trikafta, but says that studies are needed to know exactly how many. In the meantime, some patients have quit Trikafta altogether, their neuropsychiatric symptoms too debilitating even on a lower dose. Physically, I was feeling the best I've ever felt, says Amy LeCointre, of her time on the drug. But mentally, I felt on the verge of a panic attack almost every day. The contradiction confused her. How could she be so anxious and depressed when her health was getting so much better? When she finally decided to try stopping Trikafta, the nervous energy that had filled her body all day long dissipated, but her CF symptoms came back. During our phone conversation, she paused every few minutes to cough. She and Jenny have known each other for years, going back to their mutual hospitalizations. The three of us were supposed to meet over apple cider floats when I was in Utah, but LeCointre had health issues come up at the last minute, the kind of disruption that happens all the time for people with a chronic illness. For a while, her Instagram feed filled with people on Trikafta, whose lives were transforming while hers stayed the same. She had to delete social media from her phone. She still feels sad, sometimes, that Trikafta didn't work out for her. But she was able to go back to one of Vertex's two drug combos, and although it is less effective than Trikafta, she feels so much better. There is more to cope with, but the coping is easier. For another group of CF patients, Trikafta simply does not work. About 10% lack the F508del mutation that the triple combination was specifically designed to fix. Over time, though, scientists have found that some less common mutations are similar enough to F508del that those who carry them still benefit from Trikafta. And in late 2020, word got out that the FDA would soon approve the drug for additional mutations. Gina Ruiz remembers waiting and waiting for the list of new mutations that fall. She had spent the past year watching her peers on Trikafta be handed what she thought of as a reverse Uno card: reverse weight loss, reverse lung decline, reverse CF, while her own health continued to worsen. She was sitting in a car when she saw the list, and she scrolled through the 177 new mutations, hoping to find hers. She was crushed when she did not. Ruiz and most people in the 10% have mutations that leave their CFTR protein too garbled or incomplete to correct with any combination of fixer molecules. Treating these mutations will require a different strategy altogether. The Cystic Fibrosis Foundation continues to fund research into a cure for all, and scientists, including those at Vertex, are once again exploring genetic therapies, applying the lessons of past failures. But a genetic therapy breakthrough specific to CF is still years, if not decades, away. After Vertex created that first drug for the 4%, the path toward Trikafta was clear. After Trikafta, Terra Incognita. Ruiz is wary of getting her hopes up again. At age 29, she can no longer work. She lives with her parents. Her lung function has fallen to 30%. And in December, her weight reached a new low of 89 pounds. "I went to Target last night and I was beyond exhausted," she told me the following month. Her knees hurt too, another complication of CF. As she's watched her peers on Trikafta get married and chase after toddlers, her own world has shrunk. Halfway through the store, she got so tired that she had to go rest in a chair in the home goods section before she could go on. Other patients with rare mutations told me the CF communities they once relied on for support have become quiet, as the 90% have gotten on with their lives. "It's extremely isolating," says Steph Hansen, who was steeling herself for another hospitalization when we spoke in January. She describes it as a 1-2 punch. Her health is no better, yet she has lost the community that once supported her. She's connected with a handful of other patients who can't take Trikafta, but CF is already a rare disease, and they are the rarest of the rare. The F508del mutation is most common in people of European ancestry, so people with mutations ineligible for Trikafta in the U.S. are disproportionately Black or Latino. Globally, the proportion of people ineligible is higher in Latin America, Asia, and Africa, where diagnosis and treatment for CF also lag. In most developing countries, even eligible patients cannot get Trikafta, because Vertex currently does not sell its expensive drug outside of a few dozen countries, concentrated in Europe and the English-speaking world. Vertex says it has a pilot program that provides Trikafta at no cost to people with CF in certain lower-income countries. Its patents also block other companies from making a cheaper generic version. In early 2023, activists asked four countries to revoke or suspend patents for Trikafta in a coordinated campaign. One of the countries was India, where the New York Times wrote about a father named Seshagiri Budhana. His son would have been able to take Trikafta if he lived in the U.S., but he died in December 2022, one day before he would have turned 9. All of this weighs on Jenny. What makes her different from those who have died, other than the luck of being born at the right time, in the right place, and with the right mutations? 2 days after my visit to Utah, Jenny's father, Tom, had a heart attack while chopping firewood. He felt short of breath, and a trip to the hospital revealed that his major arteries were 90% blocked. When Jenny texted me the news, she said she had been replaying our recent conversations about life and death. She was glad to feel, upon learning her father might die, that nothing between the two of them was left unsaid or unresolved. I thought of what Tom had told me in his living room. Before we had gone over to his house that day, Jenny had warned me that her dad was a jokester, not a man prone to earnest reflection. But when the conversation shifted to the impact of Trikafta, he turned to me, completely serious. "I was going to bury my kids, and I'm not. They get to bury me, which is the way it's supposed to be." We all fell silent for a moment as we felt the weight he had been carrying all those years. After burying his eldest daughter at 14, Tom could no longer watch movies in which children die. In Jenny's years of sickness, he had often driven her 2 hours to the hospital in Salt Lake City, but he rarely set foot inside. "Hospitals are places where people go to be born or to die," he'd say, "and all my children have already been born." After his heart attack, Tom needed an emergency quintuple bypass surgery. He did well and came home to recover. He spent the time rethinking his priorities. Just before falling ill, he had skipped a family outing to an amusement park to work. Now he regretted it. He's become more open about his emotions, still a jokester. He'd taken to saying that his heart had been opened in more ways than one since the surgery. "It's interesting," Jenny says. "Her father has lived a longer and very different life from her own, but she recognizes what he is going through." "People die from this," he started saying. "I could have died from this." He got close enough to see death's shadow, only to be pulled back to a life whose familiarity suddenly felt unfamiliar. What would he do with his unexpected life? "Hey," Jenny told her dad, "I get it." And that article, titled "After the Miracle," was written by Sarah Zhang, who is a staff writer at The Atlantic. Next is a poem written by Monica Rico, titled "Tomato and Lettuce." Then everything was garnish. 2 kids and a house. A wife who kept the beds made. Shirts ironed. Secrets hidden like dust on the canned goods. What can't be washed with vinegar, scum of the coffee pot, or set out in the sun with fresh linen my mother swears had to be ironed, and I believe men made work for women, invented tile, starch, matrimony, and ama de casa to chop the tomato and lettuce, sometimes in bowls, often on the side as adornment. What is the relationship between mother and daughter, tree and limb? The moment I say my memory is not of her sadness, but of her laughter, I've gotten it all wrong. The bright split of my birth was to a woman who wanted me. To wear my decoration, a tree cleaned of its bark, after a cool winter doesn't forget its leaves. And that poem, once again, titled Tomato and Lettuce, was written by Monica Rico, who is the author of the poetry collection Pinyon. And that's it for this installment of the Magazine Rack. I've been reading from the April 2024 issue of The Atlantic. I'm Bill Walton. So long until next time.